Tonight I'm talking about the weather inside. We've had some pretty exciting weather outside today, huh? How about them winds? It's really important to be able to see inside the window into what's going on in your own mind. Because when you can't, it's like renting space in your attic to the devil. Or, as they say in the Sutta, Mara. On a day-to-day or a moment-to-moment basis, meeting the world without checking on inner dynamics first is like wearing only sandals, shorts, and a t-shirt out into a winter storm. The chances are pretty good you're going to get soaked, either by yourself or someone else or something else. So how do we do this? How do we look inside? It sounds simple. You know, I've often used the analogy of snorkeling. You just put on your mask, put the snorkel in your mouth, put your head underwater, watch the fish. Well, sometimes you do all that and all you see is just murkiness. And it takes a while to develop whatever it takes for all of that murkiness to settle down. Part of it is mindfulness, but there's more to it too. We can develop this ability to check on our internal weather by doing it under benign conditions, such as meditation. It can be hard, but during the rush of daily life, it's hard to go very deep. It's like looking at the stars when the moon is full, or you're in the middle of a city with bright lights all around. All you can see are the really bright ones. So most of the time during daily life, the only thing that comes through are either the really loud thoughts or the really powerful emotions. An example of a great opportunity to look inside the window was my day yesterday. You probably all know that there was a day-long retreat, and I was one of the leaders, and I had a very active mind. I was really looking forward to a day of peaceful mindfulness meditation with all of my practice buds. And what I ended up with was this huge range of mental fabrications, thoughts and emotions, mood, attitudes, all of it just swirling around constantly. And they were all expressing desire or aversion or just plain confusion. And I was aware that I had this desire not to have all this mental activity happening. But that's what it was. And I understood that I was being presented with a great, although unwelcome, opportunity to sharpen my practice with the third foundation of mindfulness. The foundation is mindfulness of mind. This window inside into the mind is something that we have to develop. And we're given some guidelines in the Satipatthana Sutta and by the writer of a book by that name called Anileo, or Anileo. The sutta itself tells us to look for greed, hatred, delusion. Kind of obvious, these are the sources of suffering. And then something called distraction, which the commentators interpret as either restlessness or sloth and torpor. So you get five for the price of four. And it sounds a lot like the five hindrances, but it's not. Similar, but not the same thing, because instead of doubt with mindfulness of mind, you're to look for delusion. I spent hours poring over the various suttas and commentaries and trying to really pin down what is meant by this use of distraction and the use of the word delusion. Because, you know, they seem kind of similar, but they're not. The word delusion, in Anileo's book, he offers two commentators' descriptions of what this mind state feels like. And one is being hopelessly entangled in a net, and the other is running around in circles. It's notable, this is the smallest section of the whole sutta. It's just one paragraph, as opposed to page after page that you get with the body or with the Dharma. So the four foundations of mindfulness, just to give a retrospective of them, is the body and the breath, feeling, tone. The Pali word is vedana, V-E-D-A-N-A. And that is, you like it, you don't like it, or, yeah, you don't really care.
Third and fourth foundation.
Okay. Thank you. The third is mindfulness of mind, and the fourth is mindfulness of the Dharma. And that's where you're such a good scholar that you have memorized all of these lists, key lists, and you can identify which of them is going on in your mind at any given time. Besides this one paragraph that tells you what to look for in mindfulness of mind, there's also the usual refrain that you get with all of the other foundations of mindfulness that says there should be mindfulness that there is mind established in the practitioner to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness. In other words, keep some distance from what you're looking at so that you can just note what you see. You don't want to get lost in it. Don't involuntarily take a ride on a train of thought. Don't get swept away by an emotion, but notice, oh, that's an emotion that's going by. It's a nifty trick to be able to do this, especially with some, you know, really powerful emotions. But when you're having a day or just a session of meditation, like I had yesterday, you get a lot of opportunity to try to watch this stuff from a little bit of a distance. And what I was doing to try was I kept coming back to the breath to reestablish that mindfulness enough so that, as the sutta says, I could have bare knowledge that this is what I was seeing. Now, for Anilayo, this refrain also means that we shouldn't try to suppress these mind states. As I said earlier, I really wanted to have a nice, peaceful day, and I would have had to do that in order to have. I would have had to suppress these mind states in order to have a nice, peaceful day. And then there would have always been this undertow trying to take me away. Calm, quiet, easy day wasn't in the cards for me. When we just observe them, as Anilayo suggests, we get a real education. It's very educational, and it's an education that's very, very useful in our lives. Anilayo says that this uninvolved receptivity of not getting on to the train of thought is required because of one's instinctive tendency to ignore whatever contradicts or threatens your sense of importance and personal integrity. In other words, we don't want to see it if we wouldn't like ourselves after seeing it. Our minds are smart enough to know without our being aware of it. So they distract us. So it really is kind of a tough job to look through the window, through the murkiness. And Anilayo says that we have to break this habit of ignoring what we don't want to see in order to access thoughts and emotions, motives and tendencies through that murkiness, to be able to see the fish when we go snorkeling. We can train ourselves to look more and more clearly at our mind states, and especially the ones that we don't want to acknowledge. And the way to do it is to just keep trying. Just keep trying. I wish you all a hideous day like I had yesterday. Because it's such a great opportunity. I mean, and, you know, especially if you're leading the day long and you can't possibly walk out. Just keep trying. Just keep establishing enough mindfulness for bare awareness of what it is. Like I said, it's an education that will be very useful, because Anilayo says this will deactivate these mind states' emotional and attentional pull. So gradually, this thing that keeps us from being able to see them gets weaker and weaker. Now, how does this gravitational pull make itself known? Well, mood is a good one, and obsessive thinking is another big hallmark. It's what I call the hamster wheel of thought, where we just keep going over and over it. And another wonderful way it expresses itself is through behavior that appears completely irrational. Now, it is rational. It has the reasoning of the subconscious, basically. When you look at it from that perspective, it makes perfectly good sense. Developing the ability to observe our internal weather will help us stop getting really emotional at unpredictable times and acting out for reasons that we can't identify. You know, you ask a young teenager, why did you do that? They don't have a clue. Sometimes you ask somebody significantly older than in their teens, still don't have a clue. Well, this is one of those things that the mind is just bouncing off of when we try to look at it. So if you're noticing a strong emotional charge or a mental thought wheel or, you know, irrational behavior, look for it. Look into it. So all of this is just a scholarly way of stating a simple principle that was offered to students in the online Introduction to Meditation course that I teach, and that is, and I quote, by meeting the mind states with attention that is free of judgment or commentary, we are in effect stepping outside of these mind states. Isn't that wonderful? If you have just enough mindfulness for bare awareness that they're there, you got it half licked. You have stepped outside and they don't have all the power anymore. You've just unplugged their power over you. And this to me is reminiscent of the night of Buddha's enlightenment when he got a visitation by the personification of the worst mischief that the mind can get up to, and that's Mara. This visit brought Buddha overwhelming visions of monsters and horrific scenes and thoughts and emotions. And then he instantly ended those moments of torment by saying, I see you, Mara. Bear awareness. This is a mind state. And there's all of this power behind it. What's going on? So my experience yesterday in observing that array of mind states had this other great payoff. And that was, even though I didn't ask what's going on, I found out. And it didn't happen during the retreat yesterday. But it possibly happened during my sleep. You know, that wonderful subconscious thing that we have. It was an insight. So that when I woke up this morning, it was quite clear to me what it was that was underlying that mental turbulence yesterday. And this gave me a great deal of power. I knew what the cause was. And I debated quite a bit while I was preparing this talk whether or not I should say what it was. You know, is it TMI? But here's the deal. It wasn't a ferocious visit by Mara. It just wasn't what I wanted yesterday, you know, but it still was Mara. It was a form of clinging to things that I don't want to give up and my dislike of the idea of losing them. And I'm talking about my health and the fear of losing physical and mental abilities, which, hey, it's inevitable. But these thoughts and feelings that were swirling around me yesterday were expressing these feelings of greed for, you know, health and hatred of the losing of it and the delusion that I could somehow avoid it. In other words, it was the whole shebang. I've been working on this for over 20 years, and in the meantime, I haven't gotten any younger. So, you know, there's been quite a lot of... Thank you very much. That's really sweet. But you're feeding my delusion. Nothing personal. I appreciate it. But, anyway, I've had plenty of practice with this particular complex of clinging. And the benefit of it was evidenced in the fact that what I went through yesterday was relatively mild.
What was that word?
It was pretty mild. But, you know, the mind was really busy. And I didn't really know what was going on with it until something came together in my sleep. And I had the insight when I awoke. And, you know, I think the reason why I'm still fighting this is, for Pete's sake, I've been a Buddhist all these years. I should be over this. I mean, I just expressed it a few paragraphs ago. That, hey, everybody, you know, it happens to everyone. I should be used to the idea by now. So that was what Analia was talking about, that it didn't resonate with my idealized idea of myself. This is the snarl of confusion that I got into this afternoon, because the delusion and the confusion that are talked about in the suttas, if you follow the scholarship far enough, it keeps coming back to this idea that we have of who we are. And I'm poking it right in the belly, because that's what looking at it does. It makes us see that we're not who we think we are. And so, you know, it's like I turn away from the gore in the movies. I don't want to see that. But the more that I see that this kind of clinging does exist in my mind and observe it, free of judgment or commentary, the less gut-wrenching it becomes, the less power it has. So another reason I hesitated naming this issue, besides TMI, is that it's not about that. It's about the dynamic of seeing what's going on in the mind. That's what this talk is about. And all of the issues that we might have that make it hard for us to look into the window and see what the weather is like inside operate the same way. And our approach to them is the same. It's universal. Whatever the issue is, we need to accept everything about the contents of our minds, including our resistance to seeing them. What more powerful way can there be of loving ourselves? But to be able to accept everything that's inside our minds, to know and accept ourselves just as we are, every moment. So I highly recommend this practice. Cuddle up with a friend on a rainy night. And to help this sometimes harsh medicine go down, regular metta practice is a pretty good idea too. Thank you.